All right, well, thank you very much for the Kim, for the invitation to show us about our research we've been doing over the years. It's actually turned into a fairly long-term project now. And nice, thanks Dan for segueing us into the swine area away from cattle. So basically I'm going to discuss some work we've been doing for a number of years now, looking at stored swine manure and the ability to reduce emissions and odor from these facilities. There we go. As most of us are aware, over the years, consolidation in the animal production industry has caused the producers to put more and more animals into a smaller area for economic purposes. The net result of this is good for the animal producer, but also creates a problem of what do you do with the increased production of manure. Now, manure, at least in the swine area, is a valuable renewable resource. It's a great fertilizer for the corn and soybean producers, especially in the Midwest. The problem that comes arises is during the period of storage. It can be applied twice a year, but between that time, it has to be stored and managed. And there are several ways to manage manure depending where you are in the United States. There's always potential for lagoons and storage tanks. In the Midwest, the primary method of storage is under barn storage, which Dan just mentioned here about swine manure, whereas under each of these barns would be concrete pits, but generally in the neighborhood of 6 to 8 feet deep, where in slatted floors above it, where the pigs grow and during their production stages. All the urine, feces, unused food, and water drop through the slats into the pits where it's stored and used later pumped out, used as fertilizer. Now, during that time period where it's being stored, the bacteria present from the feces are growing, doing biochemical processes. The net result of that is production of a variety of aromas, chemicals, emissions such as greenhouse gases. Now this is just a partial list of volatile organic compounds that have been studied from swine manure. As last time I've read, there's over 300 compounds that have been identified in what they call swine manure odor. For those of you who are fortunate enough who've never experienced swine manure odor, you're lucky. If you've ever driven by a swine facility in the summer and smell what it like, this what they call manure odor, it's very potent. It's very obnoxious. And if you live downwind from these facilities, it's not a great experience to go out on a summer day and have this odor come by. It's also been questions arisen about what are the health implications of such of these compounds present in odor. In addition to this, we have other emissions concerned from swine manure, including ammonia, which affects the animal in the facility as well as the workers. Hydrogen sulfide, same problem. It's a combination of hydrogen sulfide in the odor as well on its own. It's a very toxic and emission, and methane and other greenhouse gases. So it would be nice to be able to reduce at one time all the emissions as well as the odor. And so the powers that be in ARS suggested to us in Peoria that perhaps we could work on this problem and see if anything we do to intervene and reduce these emissions. Now I went back and looked at some archived photos just to give you an idea of how we addressed this question. This is a picture of Mike Cotta, a colleague who worked on the project. And what we do to access the manure, it's go through these openings outside the barn. This is where they use facilities for pumping out the manure twice a year. We use a tank sampler to go down into the manure, and then since we've modified it, where we can take bottles down at different depths if we choose to, open the bottles, and then bring them back up, take them back to the lab. As far as the feces, the gastrointestinal tract, it's fairly straightforward to get a fecal sample. We have hundreds of pigs in the facility. If you just look around, wait for a fresh one. And you tell them how long this project's going on, because I still had brown hair then. So basically, when we started the project a number of years back, we wanted to go two different directions. One is the classical microbiology, where we bring back these samples, play it out, and try to figure out who's living there. At the time, very little work had been done on the swine gastrointestinal tract, much less on manure. And so we're trying to figure out who's living there. At the same time, we've been using the molecular methods, using 16S sequencing of DNA isolated from both the manure and the feces. And so basically, combining these two techniques, trying to get a handle on which bacteria, what's the ecology of the ecosystems. And also during the plating work, the primary bacteria living there are anaerobic bacteria. So all the plating work had to be done in glove boxes, growing them on the anaerobic media, which is labor intensive, but it's the way it had to be done, because as it turns out, we knew this already going in, it's an anaerobic environment under the barns. So basically, this is where we did the work. What we found was in initial plating work, we found that depending on what your media, of course, it's going to impact your ability to recover viable bacteria. And what we found is in feces, that we compared rumen fluid media, which is different media combined with additional rumen fluid, and compare that to swine slurry media. We're trying to make a habitat simulation media to try to enhance recovery of the bacteria. And what we found in the fecal work in the feces, that was much higher recovery, over 10 times, using rumen fluid medium versus the swine slurry medium. We found the inverse is true when you look at 3 foot and 6 foot pit samples, just looking at total bacteria recovery, and these are times 10 to the 8th, so looking at 10 to the 9th to 10 to the 10th bacteria per mil. And what we found was when we used swine slurry medium, we had a much higher increase in recovery of bacteria from the pits versus that rumen fluid medium, which initially suggested perhaps an ecological shift in the bacteria present between the feces and the pit. And just recently, just as a comparison, I'm going to throw out real quick, we did some work with aerobic bacteria present in the swine manure. There's much less counts in the neighborhood of 10 to 6, 10 to 7, but still a significant amount of aerobic bacteria present in these. And depending on what your media you use, again, demonstrating the impact between feces and manure slurry, between nutrient broth media, for example, and brain heart infusion. Again, re-emphasizing the ability, what you choose to plate on will generally greatly impact your ability to recover the different bacteria. So the miscellaneous parameters, definitely a new area for us when we went back and sampled several times. The temperature in the underground pits, say it relatively constant 24 degrees, probably which causes under the frost line, also the metabolic activity of the bacteria. We found the pH still around 6.85 to 7, a little lower than Dan mentioned, which I thought was very interesting, but it seemed to be a fairly constant parameter. When we looked at a 3 foot that day, that was pretty much in the middle of the pit. We found approximately 1 times 10, this is from microscopic counting, about 10 to the 10th cells per mil, fairly high number we thought. It was more interesting on that particular day when you measure the parameters of the pit, it came up with approximately 500,000 gallons on that particular day in that one pit. So the total bacterial numbers comes out about 2 times 10 to the 19th, which is a high number, but if you do a quick comparison that we did between human and swine manure pit bacteria, what you see in Peoria, we have about 700,000, Illinois, above a million. The world, we're talking about billions. One pit, we're looking at 10 to the 19th bacteria, and that's just one pit on one farm. So when you apply all this manure at one time to different lands, you're applying a lot of bacterial load. I thought that's kind of interesting from a mycological point of view. So in summary, this is a summary of the work we did for a number of years. With the microbial population of the swine feces and manure source pits are dominated by anaerobic bacteria. And the highest number of viable recoverable cells were from pit samples with media containing 80% clarified swine slurry, simulating the environment they're growing in, whereas fecal samples, we've got much higher recovery using depleted rumen fluid. Looking at 16S RNA gene sequences from the total DNA and pure cultures, comparing them, we found that indicated presence primarily low GC gram-positive bacteria, primarily such as Clostridia, Streptococcus, Lactobacillus enterococcus, in both pit and fecal samples. Those are just genera you see in this type of low GC gram-positive. However, what was more interesting to us was that the vast majority of the bacterial isolates could not be identified to the genera level. And a number of strains represent new genera and species, and we spent a fair amount of time over the years identifying new genera and species and publishing on these. So there's two rich ecosystems for finding new and novel bacteria. And when you look at we wanted to do, we're very interested in looking at production of hydrogen sulfide being the toxic compound that it is, and one of the things we were interested in is the bacteria produces. And this is work that was carried out initially by Kim Cook, who was a postdoc in our lab at the time, and followed up later on by the second postdoc, Cheryl Spence. And so what we found was using DSRA gene as a way to do similarity comparisons between different sulfate-reducing bacteria. And Kim pioneered this work in our lab. We have identified three new groups of sulfate-reducing bacteria present in the swine manure. These groups fell within the lineages of the Sulfobulbus, the Sulfovibrio, and the Sulfovibrio again, that's a typo, sorry about that. However, the clones did represent novel species within the genera, again reflecting the ability to find novel organisms within these ecosystems. So basically we've got a lot of microbiological data at the microbial ecology. Going back to the original question, how do we reduce odorous compounds and gaseous emissions like greenhouse gases? And so we use this information in our analysis to compare it to another ecosystem that contained gram-positive low GC organisms, which is the rumen of cattle and sheep, which my colleague Mike Cotta had worked with previously, and I had done some work on that too. The rumen also has a similar ecosystem, and what was discovered was that certain animals, when they ate certain leaves, especially in Australia, went off feed, growth reduction stopped and slowed up. And what it attributed to was the presence of tannins in the leaves. When the animals eat them, the tannins in the leaves were affecting the bacteria, the rumen. They wouldn't be able to break down feed. As it turns out, these tannins were the condensed tannins, which are a very large complex carbon compound with polyphenolic compounds present in most plants, leaves, bark, and trees. Also present, obviously, in grape leaves when you had the mouthfeel of red wine. That's a condensed tannin effect. What's interesting is that these tannins can affect these different type of bacteria. So we thought we found some way to ameliorate or intervene in the production and reduction of odor and gases. We found something that's natural, non-antibiotic. We thought this might be a potential avenue of research. So in order to carry out these assays, what we did was create an in vitro manure assay. We combined fresh feces, swine manure in the lab, and buffer under anaerobic conditions, and we could actually, by keeping a serum stop in bottle, we can measure gas production by inserting a needle with a gas meter to project to get pressure. We can convert pressure into mils of gas produced. We could also take samples out over time to look at different environmental questions, such as sulfate-reducing bacteria and other parameters. And we used the headspace gas with using gas chromatography to look at different gas production. So we looked at various condensed tannins from different plants. These tannins vary in their structure, a lot of them are unknown, but they do vary in their amount of the polyphenolics as well as other compounds present. And what we found is using control of no tannins to look at cumulative gas reduction over time as 100%, the tannins from the Quebracho tree of South America, there's a great inhibition of 0.5% weight to volume of both 98% overall gas reduction. Whereas things like from the chestnut tree or the wattle and taro root, we actually found varying amounts, but actually some of the tannin preparations actually promoted gas reduction by additional sugars or other compounds that the bacteria could use. So we decided to concentrate our work on the Quebracho tannin and see whether or not we could get more detailed analysis of the effect of this compound. When you look at total gas reduction, as I've indicated before, this was demonstrated cumulative gas reduction over time of 42 days and looking at mils of production of gas, and this is control. And when we added Quebracho tannins, we can reduce it up to 98%, in this case 95% here in this experiment, but it had a very nice effect on total gas production. And we looked at hydrogen sulfide, and we were very interested in reducing hydrogen sulfide as an indicator of both odor and as a toxic gas itself. Also, hydrogen sulfide has been promoted as a potential way to measure odor production from facilities, swamp facilities by the EPA, for example. And when you look at control, again, over 28 days here, we see a tremendous decrease in production of hydrogen sulfide over time. In this case, it's almost 80-90% reduction in hydrogen sulfide production. We affect the tannins now, total sulfate-reducing bacteria, again, worked by Kim Cook and Cheryl Spence. And what we see is that when you look at using a DSRA gene and quantitative PCR, we can see the impact of these tannins on the total levels. On the top line is control over 28 days. The bottom line is actually tannin addition. So we see a significant decrease in the total sulfate-reducing bacteria population after the addition of tannins. And we look at those particular three groups I mentioned earlier, the A, B, and C, those groups that were identified by Kim and Cheryl, and what we see is that there is an effect on these, again, using quantitative PCR and DSAR gene over time of 28 days. The gray box is control, black box with the addition of tannins. And interesting enough, it seems like group A had a much more of a decrease in total DSAR gene numbers versus the other two. But there is a significant decrease here and here over time. And we can carry out longer and does not come back also. And you look at total bacterial numbers based on copies of the 16S or the DNA gene, again using quantitative PCR, we do see an impact on numbers, control in gray, tannins in black, overall for 28 days reduction in total bacterial numbers. And finally, we want to look at methane production, and one thing we could follow also, which we found very exciting, because when we add up tannins to this, this is production of control over 28 days. And after acting 24 hours, methane production ceased completely. And this was carried out, I've carried it out for several months, and no return. This is probably a reflection, perhaps, of the impact of the tannins on the methanogens directly, and also production of hydrogen, which we've noted a decrease in also by analysis. So both those combined greatly reduced the methane production. So therefore, at this point, we want to look at future work. We have the known knowns, known unknowns, and unknown unknowns, as Don Rumsfeld referred to. We're trying to figure out what to do next. Look at, we'd like to do some on-site farm testing using the tannins. The question is, how is the analysis question becomes a problem? How do you analyze the different compounds on a farm? And working to collaborate with different groups for that. Can we find other tannins or portions of the tannins that may be useful versus complete tannins? We've tried to break down the glycotannins into different components, either by ethanol extraction and other methods, and found some potentials in these different fractions that may be able to use separate from the intact tannins. And finally, trying to get companies to transfer the technology to. We've been in talks with several companies that provide products to the swine industry for reducing things like odor and ammonia production. And then try and perhaps incorporate the carbocotannin into the formulations. So I'd like to acknowledge the work of Mike Cotter, my former colleague, who's retired from ARS now, Rhonda Zeltwanger, who's his technician, who's also retired now, Cheryl Spence, who's still teaching in the Peoria area, and of course, Dr. Kim Cook, who's ARS in Bowling Green. And finally, for those approaching lunchtime, I want to make sure people should limit themselves to one drink at lunch. If somebody come back afterwards, you don't want to be too logy, so you don't want to keep that in mind. So if we have time for questions, if not, I'll be around afterwards. Thank you very much.
We do have time.
We actually have time for questions.
Oh, okay. Yes.
That is fascinating. Anyway, what I'm wondering...
It is so, yeah.
Okay, so that Corbacho, yeah. I mean, that was introduced into the pig story. Could you do something where you, like, gave it to the pigs, like a pig vino product?
Well,
or is that not feasible?
I can't have a good answer to you. I'm not sure what the impact of animal production would be on growth. I'm not sure. If you disrupt the intestinal tract flora, you're asking for lots of questions that could affect animal production. And so, basically, we're looking more of a way to ameliorate effect in the pit. That question has come up before, and yes, and that was an issue. When we try to do that to cattle, they try to add feeding tannins to cattle to reduce protein breakdown. But then there's a problem. They try to affect the animal performance. So, yes, I'm sorry.
You were talking about the magnitude of anaerobic bacteria and then pig manure.
Yes.
So when it's spread out on the field and it's
presumably, well, I think in the Midwest, they use mainly injection, but presumably they will, some will persist, some won't. And it's just like any other ecological niche. It depends where they are and who they're competing against, especially on an injection site. So to answer your question, I'm sure it hasn't been looked at as far as spreading, especially on a surface spread. Yes?
So if you add your favorite tannin into the material and you reduce these emissions, you're blocking some sort of system or pathway. What is remaining, and what's its environmental effect?
What do you mean, what is remaining?
Well, something's not happening.
Right.
So some products are not being broken down, or they're not being converted to something else. So
the net result is carbon and nitrogen is retained in the manure. Is that the question? I'm not sure exactly what we're... we've done some collaborative work with Michigan State University and Mel Yokoyama, where he's been looking at borax addition for a similar approach. And they've been able to take the manure that's been tannin treated and apply it to test fields for corn and soybean. We've actually seen enhanced corn growth. And when they looked at the analysis of the manure, there were higher levels of carbon and nitrogen retained, probably from less emissions. I'm not sure that's answering your question.
So it sounds like bottom line, when you finish up, you got a good environmental product.
Yes, and the tannins presumably being a natural product and also may enhance the soil once the plant is applied.
Yeah, protein and carbohydrates are what's fueling the odor compound production for the swine. So
undegraded proteins and carbohydrates.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.